Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You are listening to The Evidence Locker. Our cases have been researched using open source and archive materials. It deals with true crimes and real people. Each episode is produced with the utmost respect to the victims, their families, and loved ones. New Orleans, prior to Hurricane Katrina, Mardi Gras, Bourbon Street, Jazz, the Crescent City. But as the hurricane drew closer, a love would be born in the eye of the storm that would end in one of the most brutal and unexplained murder-suicides the city had ever seen. On October 17, 2006, at 8:30 p.m., police were called to the Omni Royal Hotel to attend the scene of an apparent suicide by jumping. The victim had fallen 5 stories from the rooftop down onto the asphalt of the hotel parking lot. It looked like a sad tragedy. A handsome 28-year-old man who had decided to take his own life. But this was only the beginning. In the young man's pocket was a note that would reveal one of the most gruesome crimes ever committed in New Orleans. The note read, "This is not accidental. I had to take my own life to pay for the one that I took. If you send a patrol car to 826 North Rampart, you will find the dismembered corpse of my girlfriend Addie. In the oven, on the stove, and in the fridge, and a full-signed confession from myself, Zach Bowen. I scared myself, not by the action of calmly strangling the woman I've loved for 1.5 years, and then desecrating her body, but by my entire lack of remorse. I've known forever how horrible of a person I am. Ask anyone. I decided to quit my jobs and spend the 1500 cash I had being happy until I killed myself. So that's what I did. Good food, good drugs, good strippers, good friends, and any loose ends I may have had. I didn't contact any of my family, so that'll explain the shock. And had a fantastic time living out my days. It's just about time now." Police were not sure if the content of the note was a hoax. It simply sounded too horrific to be true. Even considering the note, nothing could have prepared even the most seasoned detectives for what they were about to discover at the apartment above the Voodoo Spirit Temple in the French Quarter of New Orleans. Zach Bowen was born on the 15th of May, 1978, in Bakersfield, California. He was the youngest of two brothers. Growing up, they moved around quite a bit, living on the road. They stayed put in North Washington State for a while. But his father, Jack, still lived the free spirit lifestyle, drank a lot. His mother, Lori, did not want her sons to grow up with a role model like Jack, so she left him. Zach and his brother, Jed, were in their early teens when their mother took them with her to start over in Santa Maria, California. Zach was tall and a bit awkward, but he was handsome and had a great sense of humor. He did not necessarily excel at school, as he liked to march to the beat of his own drum. His free-thinking upbringing made him challenge authority, and teachers did not know how to treat him. In 1996, he was up for homecoming king. He was the underdog, and he didn't win. This had a larger impact on him than his friends and family anticipated. This class clown, who was always joking around and appeared to be unfazed about most things, took the defeat surprisingly hard. He felt like a failure, like he wasn't good enough. He dropped out of school and went to live with his father Jack up in Portland. Before father and son settled into their new life together, they took a road trip all over the southern states. They had such a great time in New Orleans that they decided to stay a while. Zach enrolled in high school again, but before long, he dropped out, as he didn't fit in. He had the constant feeling that he was an outsider and a failure. However, he soon realized that he had a way with people. He was charming and nice, and his height made him tall, dark, and handsome. He fit in with people older than him, people in their 20s who loved socializing. Because he was an easygoing guy who loved to party, he made many friends. He felt that he could get used to living in the Big Easy permanently, as he felt accepted and understood. When his father moved back to Portland, Zach decided to stay. Although he was only 18, he was drinking quite a bit. He found a job as a bartender and met a beautiful brunette called Lana Shupak. Lana worked as an exotic dancer in Dallas and was in New Orleans for a vacation. She was 10 years older than Zach, but he did not tell her his real age. The holiday romance continued after she returned to Dallas, and Zach eventually persuaded her to join him in New Orleans. They had a fun relationship, and life was looking pretty good. When Lana fell pregnant, she was shocked to learn the truth about Zach's age. She broke off their relationship and said that Zach could decide for himself how involved he wanted to be in the baby's life. Lana went through her pregnancy alone, dealing with the shock that the father of her unborn child was still a teenager. When she went into labor, she did not let Zach know. He was only informed later that his son Jackson had been born. Zach met his son and adored him from the very first moment he saw him. He saw him as often as he could, and Lana was quite surprised to see Zach step up into the role as father. In this time, their relationship flared up again. Zach wanted them to be a family and proposed to Lana. Lana had been convinced that Zach was more than just a teenager who wanted a party, so despite the age difference between them, she said yes. Weeks before the wedding, Lana found out that she was pregnant with their second child. They were married when Zach was 19 and she was 28. Zach's family struggled to accept his decision to marry Lana and felt that he was way too young for the commitment that came with having a family. A couple of months later, the couple's second child was born, a daughter they called Lily. Zach was working double shifts as a bartender at this time, and Lana was left to take care of the small children by herself. She was not very inclusive of Zach, and sometimes treated him like a child too. This affected him, again, making him feel as if he was not good enough. But he was crazy about both of his kids. So to be a better husband and father, he felt that he needed to step up in his career. This is when he decided to get his GED so he could enlist in the Army.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
The free-spirited Zach thrived in the military, much to his own surprise. He was very popular amongst his new band of brothers and really felt like he belonged, something that meant a lot to Zach, who often felt like he was a bit of an outsider. For the first time in his life, he felt like he had prospects. In the year 2000, he was sent to Germany, where he served in the military police. His job was to take care of the security of the American base. It wasn't a very high-risk position. He loved his time there and enjoyed every aspect. That is, until his platoon was sent to the war in Kosovo in 2001. It was a confronting experience, seeing the destruction of war. Lana and the kids eventually joined him on the German base, but their unconventional family had some trouble fitting into the social circle at the base. In January 2002, Zach's platoon was deployed to Iraq, and Lana and the kids stayed in Germany. Lana wasn't happy and struggled with her health during this time. Zach could not get leave from the army to be with her, and his view of the army started to change. He always went that extra mile and worked as many hours as required, more even. But when he needed something, there was no give. He witnessed one of his best friends die in a car explosion, and the effects of war and the personal trauma started taking their toll. An incident that stayed with him forever, something that he simply could not get over, had to do with a young Iraqi boy whom he had befriended. When the insurgents found out about the friendship, they massacred the boy and his whole family. Zach knew that it was time to leave and did what he had to. Because of his work ethic during his time of service, his superiors recommended that he received an honorable discharge. In the end, he was given a general discharge. With general discharge, he would be excluded from veterans' benefits like health care and tuition support. It would also raise concerns in employment opportunities, and the future was not looking promising for Zach. With Zach and Lana back in New Orleans, things had changed. He was not the same person as before, and Lana felt that it was over between them. Zach had become a stranger to her. He was different. He was not the person she married. The couple separated. His friends said that the horrors of what he had witnessed in the war were always with him. Zach knew how to party and how to have a good time, but there was just something behind his jovial smile and upbeat manner. He would never tell anyone exactly what it was that haunted him. Probably a whole lot of mental images and flashbacks to the chaos and violence of war. Zach was 27 years old and ready to start from scratch. He did not tell many people that he had been married and that he was the father of two children. People who met him took it at face value that he was a fun-loving young man who simply loved to party. He found a job at Hogg's Bar in the French Quarter, working the graveyard shift. With his charm and looks, he thrived at his job. Soon, he would be counting the hours until the end of his shift. Not because he didn't like his job, but because there was a beautiful young lady named Addie Hall who worked the shift after him. Addie was probably the polar opposite to Zach. She was a free spirit who had worked as a dancing instructor and sometimes costumes designer. The 29-year-old Addie had a fiery personality that encapsulated the bohemian spirit of New Orleans, and Zach had come to love it. He was completely head over heels for her, but the feeling was not mutual. She thought that someone like Zach, with a military background, was not exactly her type. Her dad was a Vietnam veteran, and she had seen the issues he was saddled with. She was estranged from her family who lived in North Carolina. But like Zach, Addie had dropped out of high school and came to New Orleans for a fresh start. The city suited her personality perfectly. Zach was completely taken in by her and actively pursued her. He would hang around after his shift and help Addie out where he could. He was kind and flirty, and Addie started liking him as well. After one of Addie's shifts, the two shared a bottle of Jägermeister and spoke for hours. They opened up to each other, and at the end of the night, they both knew they were meant to be together. Zach neglected to tell Addie about Lana and the kids on this occasion. He probably didn't want to scare her away. When he told his mother about Addie, she could tell that her son had met his match. He told her that Addie was his soulmate. Addie's friends saw her beaming with happiness as well. Everyone could see that this was going to be a serious relationship. When Addie heard about Zach's ex-wife and kids, she was understandably shocked. She was mostly upset because he had not told her from the start. But she had fallen in love with him, and she was in too deep to break things off. Then Hurricane Katrina made her ferocious way through New Orleans. Most of the city's residents evacuated, while others stayed. As did Lana. But she was fearful of her children's safety. So she called Zach and asked him if they could be together when the hurricane hit. Zach told Lana that he had decided to stay with Addie. Lana couldn't believe that he would choose his new girlfriend over his own children. Zach was a dedicated father, and it was unlike him to turn his back on them, especially at such a dangerous time. Addie was very scared, and Zach promised her that he would not leave her. As they waited out the storm, there was no electricity, and they bunkered down. It was the perfect situation for a new love to blossom. They had nothing but each other in those days, and they fell into a kind of deep and obsessive love. The hurricane was one of the most destructive forces of nature to ever hit the area. The once happy city was thrown into chaos. Homes were reduced to piles of rubble. Most of the city was underwater, and 800,000 residents were displaced. In the end, more than 1,800 lives were lost. There was no electricity or running water, and those who chose to stay behind and face the storm were left in a city that was destroyed beyond recognition. As soon as the hurricane had passed, everything around them was still in a state of chaos. The young lovers, Zach and Addie, took to the streets to help neighbors and friends. An article by Brent Swanser sums the situation up pretty well. The two became some of the sparse, ragtag group of holdouts who preferred to stay among the flooded wreckage of the city they loved rather than run away to a life of uncertainty. People were so thankful to be alive that there was a somewhat adrenaline-fueled festive atmosphere in the derelict French Quarter. They were adamant to keep the spirit of New Orleans alive, even in a state of emergency. People pulled together to repair homes and make meals. Zach and Addie were instrumental in this group of survivors, as they organized street barbecues and fashioned a makeshift bar. Overnight, it had become somewhat of a post-apocalyptic society, and the hot new couple thrived inside of it. They rummaged around for whatever food and drink they could find. They were also known to feed stray cats and care for pets who were left behind by their owners. They even made it into a New York Times article named, "Holdouts on Dry Ground Say, Why Leave Now?" This is what it said, quoted directly from the article by Alex Brenson. Some holdouts seem intent on keeping alive the distinct and wild spirit of this city. In the French Quarter, Addie Hall and Zachary Bowen found an unusual way to make sure that the police officers regularly patrolled their house. Ms. Hall, 28, a bartender, flashed her breasts at the police vehicles that passed by, ensuring a regular flow of traffic. In this time, Zach and Addie were so caught up in their new life, it was almost like existing on another planet. It didn't occur to either of them to let their families know that they had survived the hurricane. Lana was furious when she typed Zach's name in on the Red Cross website, holding her breath to see if his name was on the list of casualties. Instead, she saw a news article featuring Zach and Addie at their happiest, having a barbecue and partying with their neighbors. All this while Lana and the kids were in a shelter and later evacuated to Texas. Lana would not forgive Zach for this abandonment. Zach was, however, blissfully unaware of Lana, Jackson, and Lily's fates. He submerged himself into his feverish happiness with Addie. But this moment would soon pass for them. As emergency services moved in, evacuees returned. The city was cleaned up, and rebuilding projects started up. Life in New Orleans normalized somewhat. That is when things became turbulent between Zach and Addie. They would have arguments about anything and everything. It was ironic that, in a state of chaos, their relationship was at its best. But with life as they knew it back on track, their relationship was the thing in chaos. Zach found a job at a grocery store, and Addie as a bartender at a bar in the French Quarter called The Spotted Cat. They had many fights. They'd break up, and then make up. They would skip shifts at the bar as they were drinking more and doing more and more drugs. The more they drank, the more they fought. They were both attractive and received a lot of attention, which made both of them insanely jealous and possessive. When Addie worked as a bartender, she would dance on the bar and entertain customers. Men loved watching her dance and flirt, and Addie loved the attention. Addie knew if she danced and entertained the customers, she would get more tips. Zach didn't like her flaunting herself to other men at all. Because Zach was fuming about Addie's behavior at the bar, he decided to get his own back. He started frequenting strip clubs. Addie was extremely jealous and kept accusing Zach of cheating on her. Friends say that most of the fights were instigated by Addie. But then they would make up again. A deep-rooted love-hate relationship. They would always gravitate back to each other. Addie was the Stella, and Zach was Stanley. Two lovers swept up in the bohemian life of New Orleans who simply could not stay away from each other, no matter the cost. When Addie's friends confronted her about the roller coaster of a relationship in the fall of 2006, she admitted that she had had enough and that she wanted to leave Zach for good. But the volatile relationship was like an addiction. They could not break it. Both of them had strong personalities, and they knew how to push each other's buttons. And the fact that they were drinking heavily and using cocaine most of the time didn't help matters much either. In the self-created chaos of their lives, both of them had criminal charges laid against them. Zach was caught for possession of marijuana. Charges were laid against Addie for pulling a firearm on a man during an argument on the street. One night, during a time of reconciliation, Addie and Zach played drinking games at home, just the two of them. But heavy drinking and jealous rage don't mix all that well, and as the night progressed, the arguments escalated. It ended in Zach hitting Addie for the first time. He was spooked. He couldn't believe what he had done. So the next morning, he went to his friends and told them that he was leaving New Orleans and that he needed a fresh start. He bought an Amtrak ticket to go to his family in Washington State, literally on the other side of the country, as far away as possible from Addie. He spent 4 days on trains, thinking about his relationship. He missed her immensely. Addie was devastated about the fact that he left and cried most of the time. Zach felt that he had made the wrong decision, and the two of them were constantly on the phone to each other. Zach decided to return to New Orleans, not only for Addie, but also to be closer to his children. With Zach back in town, Addie was happy again. The couple buckered up for a couple of days, shutting the world out of their love bubble, almost like the time before Hurricane Katrina struck. In that circumstance, they would thrive. But that was not reality. They had bills to pay and commitments to keep. So when life returned to normal, the routine of excessive drinking and explosive fighting was as bad as it had ever been. They lost many friends in the process, because nobody enjoyed hanging out with the couple who always fought. And the fights were nasty and sometimes violent. Mutual friends also did not want to choose between them, so opted to stay out of it instead. When Zach wasn't working, he was always at the bar where Addie worked, keeping a close eye on her, listening to her every conversation with male customers. Addie told him to give her some space, but Zach ignored that request. Addie's boss, Yuri Jones, overheard a conversation where Zach said to her, "If I can't have you, nobody can." It was a peek inside the relationship, a telltale sign of how dark things had become. They weren't living together most of the time, and Zach relied on friends for a place to crash. Zach moved on for a while, but his choice and partner surprised everyone who knew him. When his friends realized he was seeing another man, he admitted that he was bisexual. Addie was blown away by this revelation. She was insulted and struggled to believe that Zach could be bisexual. She saw this as the ultimate betrayal. Like he said that he was bi just to get back at her. He'd gone too far, and now she felt that he had to pay. Addie's severe reaction and Zach's friend's confused reaction to his newly announced sexual preference brought back all the issues that had been following Zach since his teens. He felt that he was a disappointment. He didn't measure up somehow. Still, as much as he was hurt by Addie, when she was evicted from her apartment in September 2006, he agreed that they could move in together once more. They managed to find a spot to stay in the French Quarter. It was a room above a voodoo shop called Voodoo Spirit Temple on North Rampart Street. The temple was long known to be associated with positive energy, as it had been protected by the well-respected priestess Miriam. Take note that voodoo shops are found all over New Orleans. Inside the shops are altars where people who follow voodoo place gifts, trinkets, or even money to a relevant spirit to request blessings in aspects of their lives like love, success, or happiness. Zach and Addie didn't practice voodoo, so it was all the same to them. Zach had saved some money from his job at the grocery store, so he paid the deposit. 2 days after they moved in, Addie went behind his back and signed a lease with the landlord in her name only. When Zach found out about this, he called the landlord and complained, but the landlord couldn't do anything about it. He realized that Addie had planned the whole thing and was getting ready to kick him out. He would be out of his savings and homeless. On October 5th, they had their final fight. Zach complained to his landlord that Addie had threatened to kick him out. The landlord suggested they work it out, and Zach said that he was sure that they would. Addie was never seen alive again. Her boss from the bar, Yura Jones, called her many times, but Addie never called back. Yura thought that that was strange, as Addie would always return her calls. Zach, on the other hand, was seen bar hopping around town by himself. Most of his drinking buddies would say that he was in high spirits and looked as if he was having the time of his life. He spent more money than he would usually do. On October 16th, he went out with some friends and everything appeared to be normal. Zach was just his happy-go-lucky self, but he was more generous than usual, paying for drinks and ordering lap dances for a friend. He even called up his ex-wife Lana and told her that he wanted to party with her. When she asked him where Addie was, He said that she drove him crazy, so he drove her out of town. On October 17th, the bell of the last round sounded on Zach's young life. He went to the rooftop bar at the Omni Royal Hotel and opened a tab. The barman kept a close eye on him because he could see that Zach was restless and was afraid he would bail without paying his bill. But something else was brooding in Zach's troubled mind. Surveillance of the rooftop bar at the Omni Hotel showed a nervous Zach with a drink in his hand, pacing towards the edge of the roof and walking back again. He was clearly not sure if he was ready to end his life. But in the end, he took the final plunge. This is a very violent way of ending one's own life, and it shows that Zach felt he needed to atone for his actions. When he was found, his body had numerous cigarette burns, which he explained in his note as self-punishment for what he had done. Also, his army dog tags and a set of keys to the apartment on North Rampart Street were found in his pocket. When police discovered his body and the note, they realized that they could potentially have a grisly scene waiting for them. His note said, "I killed her at 1 a.m., Thursday, October 5th. I very calmly strangled her. It was very quick." The process of dismembering Addie's body was a slow one that occurred between Zach's nights of partying. He chronicled every step in his sordid murder-suicide journal. Police were able to piece together the events of Addie's last night. After their fiery argument earlier in the evening, Zach went back to the apartment and told Addie that he was not leaving. She shouted at him, saying that he slept with men and how that humiliated her. Zach became infuriated, as she had brought up his bisexuality in the earlier argument, making sure that people could hear her, passers-by, and their landlord. He told her to shut up, but she wouldn't. The argument built up to a point where it became physical. When Zach got his hands around her neck, he could not stop himself. He was far stronger than Addie, and she had no way of releasing herself from his death grip. Once Addie was dead, lying on the floor, Zach realized what he had done. In a daze of shock, he sat down and started writing down exactly what had happened. He also wrote that he violated the corpse. It was a strange account of a sick event, but he concluded, saying that he still loved Addie. This act of necrophilia sadly shows how deep Zach's psychological problems were. He had to control Addie, had to have her to himself just one last time. He did not go to work for a couple of days. When he showed up again, he was unkempt and looked like he had been partying all night. He told Addie's friend who worked with him that Addie had left him and gone to North Carolina. The friend found this strange, as Addie had not been in contact with her family for some time. Zach then went on a solo cocaine binge at the apartment where Addie lay dead. When the smell of Addie's decomposing body became obvious, he set the thermostat to 60 degrees, or 15 degrees Celsius, and took her body into the bathroom. There, he got to work, dismembering her body with a knife and a hacksaw. He cleaned the bathroom, and there was not much blood, as Addie had been dead for quite a while at the time of dismemberment. After this, he withdrew all of his money and went on the 10-day bender, choosing the pool bar at the top of the Omni Royal to be his final stop. From the parking lot at the Omni, police made their way to the apartment on North Rampart Street. They used the key they found in Zach's pocket. Detectives struggled to come to terms with the scene that awaited them. Even before the murder, the place was in chaos, as Addie and Zach had recently moved in, and then Addie threw Zach out, and then he came back. So things were still half-packed and half-unpacked. All over the walls were graffiti slogans. On one wall, it said, "Please call my wife," with Lana's name and number. On another wall, "Please help me stop the pain," with an arrow pointing to the oven where Addie's remains were, words read, "I love her. Look in the oven." There was a pot on the stove In it, they found Addie's head. It had been cooked. The skin was pulling away from the bone. In another pot, they found her hands and her feet. In the oven, police found Addie's partially cooked legs sitting in a foil roasting pan, as Zach had said in his note. He did it to separate the meat from the bone. He had also seasoned some of the flesh with herbs. Investigators did not have to search far to find the rest of Addie's remains. Inside the fridge was a large garbage bag. It held her torso. When the story got out in the media, reports were made that Zach ate some of Addie's cooked flesh. This gave him the name of the Katrina Cannibal. But despite reports of cannibalism, Zach's autopsy revealed that he had no meat in his stomach at the time of his death. There was also no other evidence that he consumed any of it. Police concluded that he seasoned the legs in the oven not because he wanted to eat the flesh, but because he wanted to mask the smell. Friends and family were mortified when they heard how Addie had died and what Zach had done. Although friends knew he had issues with PTSD and that self-medicating with drugs and alcohol probably only aggravated the problem, nobody would have ever thought that this easygoing party animal would ever resort to that degree of destruction. They witnessed many fights between Zach and Addie, but they always felt that their love for each other would always help them through it. And although Zach may have killed Addie in the heat of the moment, the pragmatic and disturbing way in which he handled her body in the aftermath was simply too much to comprehend. Some locals believed that there was some voodoo involved in the killing. The violence of their arguments escalated in the short amount of time that they lived upstairs from the voodoo spiritual temple. Talk around town was that Zach was possessed by an evil spirit at the time of the killing and subsequent dismemberment. Perhaps that made it easier to understand why the guy with the winning smile turned out to be someone who committed such an evil crime. In the suicide journal, Zach even listed out his failures. He said that he felt like a failure with his friends, with the military, in marriage, and in love. He said he always fell short, so when Addie kicked him out, ultimately ending their relationship because he had revealed an aspect of himself, his bisexuality, he snapped. Years of rage all focused on Addie because she knew him through and through. And he fell short again. The thin line between love and hate disappeared as he mutilated the body of the woman whom he loved more than anyone else. In life, they consumed each other. But in death, Zach had joined their names and their souls together in eternal tragedy. Rampart Street will always be associated with the horrific murder that took place in its center. The Voodoo Spirit Temple is colloquially known as the Rampart Street Murder House. But it is interesting to note that the house has since been reported as being heavily haunted and permeated with weird situations. Whether this is true or not, it does remain a bit of a creepy place. In February 2016, an electrical fire destroyed the building. It still stands, and spirit hunters visit it, hoping to connect with those who have passed, desperate to ask one last question. Why? If you'd like to read more about this case, have a look at the resources used for this episode in the show notes. Also visit and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/evidencelockerpodcast to see more about today's case. And join our Facebook group so you can review and chat about other cases we've covered with other listeners. If you like our podcast, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We would also appreciate it if you could review the episodes, as it gives us some street cred in the world of podcasting. While you're waiting for our next episode, why not listen to one of our podcasting friends?
I'm Rosie.
And I'm Ryan.
And we make the Voice of the Victim podcast.
We share stories about horrible things that happen to real people, and we try our best to tell it from the perspective of the victims and the survivors.
We also try to spread awareness of abuse that could be taking place around any of us and talk about ways we can stay alert to help prevent it.
We want to be encouraging to survivors and help other empathetic people to appreciate the value of awareness.
Find Voice of the Victim podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts.
And remember, if you see something, say something.
This was The Evidence Locker. Thank you for listening.
About Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.